All right, my friends, thanks for tuning into the podcast, where, as always, we'll discuss the professional literature and the evidence-based protocol as they relate to the effective treatment of clinically significant anxiety symptoms. I'm Chris Lines, licensed psychotherapist and OCD spectrum disorders treatment specialist, and this, well, this is OCD Straight Talk. This podcast is made possible by NoCD. NoCD offers effective, affordable, and convenient OCD therapy. NoCD therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention, or ERP therapy, the gold standard treatment for OCD. With NoCD, you can do virtual, live face-to-face video sessions with one of their licensed, specialty-trained therapists, and they accept most major insurance plans. To find out more about NoCD, visit nocd.com. That's nocd.com to book a free 15-minute call. For people in the state of Kentucky, you can go to kentuckyocd.com. That's kentuckyocd.com and book a session with me. Like, I wanted to be able to help, but I think at the time I wasn't sure that I could. I wasn't sure that I knew how. I mean, for sure, I didn't know how to do a podcast. I'd never done a podcast before. I'd never been on a podcast. I didn't have any training or experience as a media personality or whatever. But I definitely had a passion as an OCD treatment specialist. And I was aware that there was a lot of confusion, not just out on the internet, but in therapy rooms across this country, and I'm sure across other countries. OCDers were suffering, even though they were, some of them, in therapy and feeling discouraged. I'm not really getting better. I've been in therapy for a good long while, and maybe I get a little bit better, but then it just comes back or whatever. And I understood why that was. And so not just I had a passion for helping people, but also I had a pretty good understanding of the literature and the therapeutic process. And I had, and I think I have, an ability to teach such that I'm able to amalgamate these ideas. And it comes out as a helpful podcast for people that are suffering, wherever they are with OCD. Or anxiety-related disorders. And I don't mean to say that mine is the only podcast. Quite obviously, it's not. I just mean to say that I think mine is helpful in the way that it is for reasons pertaining to my passion to help, my understanding of the literature, and my ability to articulate, to teach ideas. But I really wrestled before launching the podcast in March of 2020. And part of that, like I say, was because I didn't know how to do this. And maybe there's a part of me that thought, I won't be able to do this. It won't really take off. It won't become anything. But I think that to some degree, what maybe pushed me to the point of deciding, yes, I'll try, was not the months leading up to March 2020, but the years leading up. I had for a long time, I had been in a really difficult position in my life, and enduring a circumstance over the period of 11 years or so. You know, I felt just terribly alone. You know, I felt terribly by myself. Like I would pretend that things were okay. Occasionally I would sort of let the facade down and share with a friend every once in a great while. I would take off the mask and share that things were really not all that good. But that didn't really ever seem to help me very much to say so. Maybe I'd get some, I'm sorry to hear that, bud. You know, or I'd get some kind of like advice that maybe it wasn't terribly thoughtful. You know, when you live in a circumstance and it's your life, you're thinking about it. You're not just aware of the details, but you've gone backward and forward from every which direction as to, well, what are my options? What can I do? You know, and some flippant advice was often, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. But it's like, dude, I've thought about that. I've thought about that already. And I've tried that already. And I've tried that many times already. And thanks, but that wasn't helpful. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Anyway, it's just one of those things where I had tried, and things were, they were so difficult. They were so difficult in a lot of ways. They were so hard. And I know I'm not sharing the details with you, you know, and I'm not talking even in general terms about what the experience was, aside from saying it went on for a long time and it was really hard. It was really lonely. And eventually it ended. But like the way it ended was very much crash and burn. You know, like I tried my best, and I really did for a lot of years. But eventually the floor fell out from under me, or whatever euphemism you'd use. But the point is that I just couldn't do it anymore. And I made a decision. And that decision proved to be, I don't know what you'd say. I don't regret the decision. But the consequence of the decision was probably one of the hardest I've had to endure in my life. You know, I've buried family members. I've deployed to war. I've been a part of search and rescue teams and had to, collect the dead. And, you know, like I've done hard things. I've seen hard things. But nothing was like this. Nothing was like this. The degree of bitter pain and the amount of time that bitter pain lasted. Again, I don't regret the decision. I would make the same decision today, only if I had a shot to do it over. I wouldn't have made the decision to enter into that situation to begin with. But anyways, the consequence ended up being that I don't know quite how to articulate what happened. I guess to put it simply, my relationship with my children changed. And it changed very, very significantly. To the point that I might say, not that I didn't have a relationship with them. That's going too far. That's not accurate. But the damage was devastating. It was so damaged that it was as if I didn't have two girls. I saw them occasionally still, but when I'd see them, they didn't really want to be around me. They would cry. They didn't want to spend time with me, and I would do my best to make things fun or to whatever. I mean, all the things that any parent might try to try and make things a little bit better, to try and make things. To try and achieve some semblance of normalcy again. But it just didn't seem to work. It just didn't seem to happen despite years of work, trying, enduring, trying again and again and again. It just didn't seem to happen. It was the same. It was the same. Maybe even it was getting worse in some way. It certainly wasn't getting better. Maybe I'm being melodramatic and it wasn't getting worse, but it surely wasn't getting better. And you might think that, well, after a couple of months of that, things, you know, might sort of start to turn a corner. Or after a handful of months, maybe so. After a year, I mean, yeah, things are beginning to return to normal, even though that normal looks different than the old normal. After 18 months? Yeah, I would think so. No, this went on for 3 years. and never really got better. It never really changed. You know, and there's part of the story that I'm leaving out, kind of because I don't know. I don't wish to say, well, this person did that and that person said this, in part because, to be honest, I don't really know that that happened. I don't know. I mean, I'm relatively confident saying some of it, but I don't know. And I think that beyond that, it's not really within the scope of this podcast anyway. Like you guys don't care, and that's fair enough. The point is that my relationship with my children was devastated. It's completely uprooted. Beyond that, though, other changes were happening, and other, I was a seminary student, and I was attending what, I don't know, maybe I'm saying it biasly, but attending one of the most prestigious, seminaries in the world, the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville. And I absolutely loved it. I loved it, man. I think that the fairest thing to say is I ended up leaving school. I never really got kicked out of school. They did ask me to take a 2-semester break for, again, reasons that are beyond the scope of this podcast. But and I was absolutely inundated with hate mail at that particular point. I was saturated with loneliness, with sort of like second guessing thoughts. Should I have done something different? You know, those kinds of things that you think when you're, you know, you're by yourself, you know, in the late hours of the night. Only I was by myself for many, many hours every day for months, and getting Facebook messages and text messages, emails from people that had known me for years of my life. People that, if I may be so bold, had no business believing some of the things that they came to just accept as true. But be that as it may, they believed and they came at me, and a lot of them. You know, so I went from a place where things felt relatively normal. They were unhappy, but they were normal. They were sustainable, I guess you could say, to my relationship with my kids was so damaged that it was almost as if I didn't have children. My seminary career had come to a screeching halt and was probably over. And like I say, I opted to leave the seminary, and so it was over. My friends, with the exception of, I don't know, one or two, all turned their back on me, you know. And it was kind of at that time that I became acquainted with the pain of humanity. I became, like, my eyes were open to the reality that a lot of people have walked this path before. You know, a lot of people have been through divorces, and a lot of people have been accused of things. And I guess what I'm saying is for a lot of years of my life, I guess I was one of those people that just kind of, I had a very myopic view. I was very, very narrow-minded, and I was quick to judge the book, you know, by its cover, meaning that I would make snap judgments based upon quite incomplete information, you know. I mean, I could tell you stories, but to be frank with you, I'm ashamed of the stories, because as I look back, I see myself as the naive, absolutely foolishly naive bad guy. The truth of the matter is the world isn't a pretty place, and people, generally speaking, aren't good. And I think that that's true. But it's also true, I think, largely, that people try their best. Anyway, over the course of whatever it was, 11 months that I spent pretty much by myself in the dungeon of my apartment, day and night. I mean, I worked from home, and I didn't have any friends. My kids wanted nothing to do with me. And really the only people that I talked to were my girlfriend, who lived in Louisville at the time, my parents, who lived in Ohio at the time. Of course, I did a fair amount of praying, but Jesus wasn't knocking on my door at night. You know, I felt pretty by myself. You know, occasionally, very, very occasionally, probably a handful of times, maybe five times, maybe in the 3 years that I lived there, that I moved back and then moved again. The 3 years that I was there, 3.5 years or whatever it was, maybe five times, I had dinner with this one friend and his wife. Other than that, no, every interaction I had with anybody was negative, was critical, attacking, based upon incomplete or sometimes patently false information. But like, that was my life, you know, and for a lot of it, I didn't do a lot of fighting back. I was so overwhelmed by it. I was so overwhelmed. All I knew to do really was I ran, you know, I avoided, I did my best to just not respond. You know, and again, hindsight's 20/20. You look back at that and you say, oh, I should have, whatever. I should have made a big stink in whatever way I could have. But I didn't, you know, and the story is what it is. So I moved on. And eventually, my girlfriend moved from Louisville to Delaware, where I was living. And in April of 2017, we got married, and 9 months later, we had our first daughter. 18 months after that, we had our second daughter. A few years after that, we had our son. Now she's pregnant again. Yes. In the summer of 19, we moved to Minneapolis to work with Tracy Lichner, the third author on the OCD treatment manual, which was cool. There's definitely some stories there, but it was cool. And then at the very end of 2020, we moved to, you know, the lower Midwest. And so it's like when OCD Straight Talk got started in 2020, what I knew really well, what I had lived, was being misunderstood and feeling very alone. Sort of doing my best in my little circle to do things the right way and to make good decisions. But on the other side of that fence, immediately out of my little circle, was just a bunch of people that obviously hated me. And again, hated me based upon some information was accurate, but a lot of it was not. And so when I started OCD Straight Talk, I had, well, like I say, a skill set and an ability to teach concepts. But maybe what I had more than that was my soul was broken, and I felt deeply for people in the world who are suffering from anxiety-related symptoms, but didn't necessarily know where to turn because they had tried therapy. They had tried it, and what they got at therapy was talk therapy and, you know, and childhood analyses and empathy and catharsis. And these are great things. I'm not saying they're not, but in terms of outcome, you know, they're not going to produce the result that anxiety sufferers go to therapy for. I mean, one of the things that I learned well when I didn't take insurance and it was just like private pay was when somebody who's suffering from anxiety shows up and they're paying out of pocket for services, they expect results quickly. And so there's a pressure on a therapist to get results quickly. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to have a business very long. You know what I'm saying? I felt for people who were trying to get better, but they just weren't getting better, you know? And like, I lived that. I endured for a long time. I tried, but nothing was really changing. And so I made a decision, and that decision ended up costing me dearly. And okay, today I can say, by God's kindness, everything that I lost has been restored to me. I'm a more authentic version of myself, and I'm happier. I'm way more confident. I would say I'm manlier than I ever was. My wife is stunningly beautiful. We have the best sex life. I mean, she has like more of a sex drive than I do. My podcast is successful. My business is successful. I have two more beautiful daughters. My son is the light of my life. And my wife is pregnant again. We love our church. We're surrounded by family. I have friends at the gym. I have friends at jiu-jitsu. And my faith in Christ is more real than it's ever been. It's deeply rooted. And it's rooted in my understanding that, like, I'm not a good person. If you leave it to me, even if you leave it partially to me, I'm going to dick it up, you know, but thankfully Christ is the hero of my salvation. So my Christianity, which I think is more real now, and it's more lived out loud now than it ever was, is completely and totally based upon the character and the sacrifice and the resurrection of Christ. And I think that, like, that's sort of the period at the end of the sentence, like the way that Jesus talks about the law, you know, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. To my mind, that's what OCD's Trade Talk has been about. That's me doing my best to care for my fellow man. You know, I'm trying to help people, even people that I'll never talk to personally. I'll never shake your hand and get to know you and sit down over a beer or a cup of coffee or whatever and just chat. Many of you, I'll never have the privilege of knowing your name, but it's my Christian duty to do what I can to make the world a bit of a better place as I pass through it. But that's really what it's been about. I mean, the podcast was born from pain, and a lot of pain. And the reason I bring it up is because I think a lot of OCDers understand that. I think a lot of people can relate to that, you know, that they're suffering with their own problems. They're suffering with their anxiety or their anxiety that's given birth to secondary depression or whatever it is, or they're dealing with these time-consuming compulsive patterns that they can't really seem to get under control. And they've tried to get better. They've worked at this, but nothing really has seemed to work. Nothing has really seemed to change, you know? And so it's like, man, I spent time there, you know? And so that's really why I'm passionate about this podcast. Is it's my job. I owe it to God, to reach out a hand and help you. And that's what I mean to do. That's why I answer your questions. That's why I explain the literature and the evidence-based treatment process, which all boils down ultimately to identifying and stopping compulsions. I mean, you've heard me say that if you've been listening to OCD Straight Talk for any period of time. Like, you've heard me say that over and over and over. That's true, because I think that you can summarize this whole process by saying identify and stop compulsions. Like, if you're doing that and you're doing it relatively consistently and you're doing it with your eyes open and you're doing it with your intention engaged, you're going to get better. It might take you some time, but you're going to get better. I mean, that really is the evidence-based treatment process at work. So you gotta stay the course a little while. That's true. You're gonna have to put some elbow grease into it. That's true. But if you got your eye focused on, you're swinging at the right ball, you're gonna get better. So anyway, I don't know, man. It's been on my heart for a long, long time to tell you something of the story behind the podcast. You know, I don't have the illusion necessarily that OCD Straight Talk is anybody's hero. But it's something I've invested a lot of my heart and my time in. And you know, for whatever it's worth to whoever's interested, I just wanted to share something of the story behind the podcast. Well, that's it for another episode of OCD Straight Talk. Feel free to reach out with any questions you might have to chrislines04@gmail.com. If you found the podcast helpful, consider giving it a 5-star rating or subscribing to OCD Straight Talk for structured help with your anxiety or OCD symptoms.